away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Tom Fairbanks, my buddy, engineering and producing the show. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It's Friday, February the 19th, 2021. We're on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening, all of the podcasts from my program at buckmastershow.com, and a very extensive archive of programs that we have done dating back to the launch of the radio show back in January of 2011. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our media partners, a big shout out to them, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. The Friday Focus interview today is with Arizona State Senator J.D. Mesnard, a Republican representing District 17. That district includes the Chandler area. Senator Mesnard serves as the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee. He served 8 years in the Arizona House of Representatives, which included a 2-year stint as Speaker of the House. He was elected to the state Senate in the 2018 elections. Also with us on the live line from Phoenix, Luigi Del Puerto, associate publisher and Arizona News Service editor for the Arizona Capital Times. Luigi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for being with us. And Senator, how are things going?
I'm doing well, and very much appreciating Arizona's weather right now, since that's the country is experiencing something else.
Yeah, oh, we are having delightful weather compared to what has happened with that really once in a generation storm that has hit Texas and other parts of the country. How is this session going, this kind of hybrid session, COVID-induced session? How are you managing to carry out the business of the state?
Yeah, it's definitely unusual, but technology is a wonderful thing. We've been able to conduct hearings while we respect social distancing, allow folks to participate remotely through Zoom. You know, it's not the greatest. Would prefer more the in-person interactions, easier to read people than through the two-dimensional TV. But overall, we're still pursuing good legislation, lots of bills, every bit as controversial in some cases as they would normally be, and continue to have robust discussion on the floor. So overall, it's different, but it's productive.
I have a stack of stuff. Luigi has a stack of stuff in front of us. And let's begin with a front page story in the Arizona Daily Star, the Senate Commerce Committee, which you chair. Senate Bill 1797 came before the committee. The vote was 6-3 to move it forward. This is the governor pushing this measure that would, for the first time, Senator, legalize betting in Arizona on the outcome of sporting events. This is highly controversial, isn't it?
It is highly controversial. Gambling itself as an issue is always going to have folks on both sides. And then you add the complexities of a gaming compact and revenue shares between the state and the tribes and other entities now, the complexities there. So, yeah, it's definitely controversial.
Why is it so controversial as far as is it because of the sporting, that this is mainly involving all sports teams, or are there some exceptions, or what's the major hang up, and do you think it will move forward?
So I think the major hang-up probably comes down to the same sorts of challenges with past compacts, although the sports betting and the fantasy sports and keno aspects, which is the major part of the bill, are new. But that's, you know, what do we allow on and off the reservations? What is the revenue share with the various gaming, it's all of that mixed together. You do have this addition of sports betting. I think they're calling it event wagering, that now involves some of our sports teams here, and they are supportive because they would benefit. So it's all of those things mixed together. And then this is just the bill. The compact is actually something separate. The bill is connected to it, but there are some unknowns with what's in the compact. And so, you know, you're voting on a bill that maybe you're not totally sure how it fits into the grand scheme of things.
And it was a 6-3 vote. Where were you on that vote?
I voted in favor to move it along.
All right, let's bring in Luigi. Go ahead, Luigi.
Oh, yeah, and thanks, Bill, and thanks, Senator Messner. You know, I do want to point out that I've always told people that now, you know, what we have right now, the kinds of capabilities and technologies that we have, we are probably most prepared than at any time in human history to deal with a pandemic and a crisis like the one that we're facing right now. Because, well, two things, right? We have Zoom and we have Netflix, and, you know, we're kind of, you know, we only need those two things, and we're kind of set. And you know, Senator Messner is exactly right. It's been a pretty productive session. It's been a pretty controversial one. It's very difficult because you don't have face-to-face interaction, so it's kind of difficult to corner Senator Messner, you know, as he's walking across the mall and trying him to, and not that he doesn't answer phone calls from the media, but I'm saying, generally, broadly speaking, you know, you don't have that ability, and it doesn't just extend to the reporters. It also extends to the public, you know, members of, you know, lobbyists and what have you, and we all kind of have to navigate through, you know, a two-dimensional presentation of things and this video platform that we all have. But, you know, all that said, I think it's great that we have this technology. And so from our end, we are able to do our job, and to a certain extent, the legislature is able to conduct its business. I do want to ask Senator Messner one thing about the gaming compact. Isn't it the sort of the crux of the issue is that we're really talking about a whole lot of money in which we negotiated the parameters, the contours of how that money is distributed. And now that current contract is ready to expire. And so, yeah, there's a new sports betting element. But at the end of the day, the difficulty is that we're dealing with how to allocate revenue, which could be potentially substantial, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, there are billions of dollars in gaming each year. Obviously, if you're expanding now gaming to, well, off the reservations in the case of fantasy and sports betting, which is, you know, relatively new thing. We've kind of looked at what other states have done. It's still in its infancy in many respects. It would bring to the market something that is otherwise typically on the black market. It's not legal. So, that is sort of a curveball in the midst of what is just by itself a challenge. You know, what is the revenue share? The bill, the compact, as I understand it, doesn't change that. It's adding these new elements to it, and so trying to, you know, package it all together.
And JD, just one quick question on that one. I know that Representative Mark Finchin, who is a Republican from Oro Valley, is contending that the governor lacks the authority to negotiate new gaming compacts. So I guess a twofold question: what do you make of his assessment? And second, what are the chances of this bill actually getting out and getting to the governor's desk?
Yeah. So in the past, governors have typically been in the lead on renegotiating or negotiating compacts. You know, the one before went to the voters. Part of, I think, the idea of having the governor renegotiate and having the tribes at the table and trying to reach a grand bargain is to avoid, you know, having to go back to the ballot. I think it's a tough job. You know, as the committee revealed, you had folks voted yes or no, actually, who thought it was either giving too much to the state or not enough to the state, or, you know, too much to the tribes, not enough from the tribes. So, which kind of tells you oftentimes you're kind of in the middle, like where you need to be for a compromise. I think he's doing the best he can. I think the one criticism I heard the most was not enough familiarity with what is in the compact that the bill is supposed to complement. And so hopefully they will, you know, reach out to more folks, although I think they'll tell you they have, but they should probably reach out to more. And I can't, you know, as far as Representative Finchin is concerned, I'm comfortable with how it's moving along. the legislature does have a role through this bill, especially, and given all the stakeholders involved, I'm fine with what's happened.
Do you think it will reach the governor's desk? And by the way, we have not put a money figure out here. What kind of money are we talking about from the gambling revenue? That would help our listeners.
So to your first question, will it reach the governor's desk? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't even sure, to be frank, when I started my committee, what the vote was going to be. There was definitely the possibility it was going to fail. And then it passed 6-3, you know, a shaky 6-3. As with the legislative process, it can be messy. Negotiations will be had. I think as more information comes out about the compact, you know, the other part that's not the bill itself, some of that will mollify people. And so I think something will get there. What that something is, will it be in its exact form? I'm going to guess there's going to be tweaks. I don't know what they'll be per se, but just the process, seldom does something go through without there being tweaks along the way. As the legislature wants to put its fingerprints on it, even if we trust the governor and are okay with him being the chief negotiator from an elected official standpoint, we want to have ownership as well. As to the money, great question. That's also one of the hangups because there really isn't an exact figure. I've heard quite a range, in fact, from as low as $50 million more to the general fund, which, you know, could go to, you know, good programs and things. So as much as $250 or $300 million.
Wow.
That's a massive range that makes it difficult to base a decision on the revenue. And admittedly is a frustrating dynamic, no one quite knows for sure, in part because it will take a while to ramp up these event wagering, gaming and, fantasy sports. As they looked in other states, it's not like you flip a switch and boom, it's up and running. You know, you're building infrastructure. And so it will take time to even know. So in the beginning, it's definitely going to be small, maybe zero, and then it would ramp up over time.
All right, let's take a break right here, because then we're going to transition after the break to the changes to election laws. Will there be changes to election laws in Arizona? And we'll address that with State Senator J.D. Mesnard of Republican from Chandler, and also Luigi Del Puerto from the Arizona Capital Times with us on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Take the break, then we'll be back with the senator. Lots more to talk about this legislative session that is now about coming up on already month and a half to pushing 2 months. We'll be right back. And I am ready right about now for some comfort food. My engineer producer, Tom Fairbanks, is always ready for a Danish Kringle. The home of the Danish Kringle is Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast. Some beautiful pastries. I've been into the cinnamon rolls lately, but I could certainly go right now for one of those beautiful muffins, blueberry, or my new favorite in the muffin category, chocolate chip. Check out monasdanishbakery.com, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Chances are I'll probably see you up there this weekend at Mona's. Be right back. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our live line guests appear courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we have two guests on our live lines today. We have J.D. Mesnard, Republican representing District 17 in the Arizona State Senate. He represents the Chandler area. He's also chair of the Senate Commerce Committee. On our other live line is Luigi Del Puerto, who manages the newsroom up at the Arizona Capital Times. Senator, the Arizona Rainy Day Fund, correct me if I'm wrong, it's over, I believe, now $1 billion with a B dollars. Should that money go to COVID relief, COVID-related items, or should it go to a tax cut?
So actually, I think it's below $1 billion because we did take some of it for COVID in the so-called skinny budget from last year. But I mean, it's certainly a lot of money, close to around $1 billion. You know, COVID is going to continue to be the top priority. We're going to make sure that we're doing what we can. And obviously, the feds are playing the largest role. And rumor is there's yet another COVID-related package coming probably pretty soon. So, you know, it's really just going to be looking at the totality of our finances to figure out where to either invest resources for COVID or the other needs of the state, and also how to remain competitive in terms of an economic position relative to other states. So it's just going to be the same balancing act we have to undergo every year, with COVID still being the top priority.
It is surprising to a lot of people that Arizona's fiscal picture, its money picture, looks much brighter than many would have thought. And I think that has to do with the sales tax revenues from online, people doing their shopping online. Is that correct?
I think there's no question that's the case. You know, we were fortunate in that, you know, we took this issue on proactively back in 2019. I was part of those discussions, but I got to give most of the credit to Representative Toma, who's now the House Majority Leader. You know, there were a lot of varying estimates of what revenue we would see even back then. And before COVID, we were seeing that, boy, it was even more coming in than we thought. And now because of COVID, it's gone even beyond that. So we started out last year projecting $1 billion surplus. Then COVID hit and we were projecting $1 billion shortfall. Now we're back to $1 billion, or depending on your counting, at more than $1 billion surplus, although a lot of it one time, some of it because of the federal money that's come. So it's been quite the whipsaw of projections. But yes, the sales tax has been critical.
All right. From the Arizona Capital Times newsroom, here's Luigi Del Puerto.
And Senator Messner, you know, when we had those forecasts last year, I think the estimate was between $1 and $1 billion. I mean, that was literally the estimate, right? That was kind of crazy to see that amount. But I think you're exactly right. I think what's happened is that we're getting money from the feds. And, for example, and correct me if I'm wrong here, some of our schools are seeing declines in enrollment, so they're not getting the ADM that they had budgeted for. And as a result of that, we're keeping a significant amount of the money that would have gone to the schools in our treasury, and that's propped up our fiscal resources, you know, for this year going to next year, correct?
Yeah, there's certainly a component that has to do with enrollment as well as even the per pupil funding that impacts the surplus. It's not a huge chunk of it, and I suspect we will move in the direction of funding in a way that will sort of undo that. But yes, there's been declining enrollment, and since we fund per pupil, you've seen a savings there, although to the extent they're going to other schools that get state money, like charter schools or whatever, so leaving districts going to charter schools, you know, we do fund charter school per pupil as well. But yes, it's been quite the whipsaw as well for schools, and definitely a challenge for them. I've been in regular contact with Chandler Unified, which is my largest school district, on this very issue.
Can you do both? Can you do tax cuts and COVID relief? Is that a goal that you would like to see, Senator?
Yeah, my goal would be to, you know, COVID has both the health component as well as the economic component. And my goal would certainly be to make sure that we're investing the resources we need to address the health component, although admittedly a lot of that is more federal related. Our role is more in implementation, so making sure that vaccines are getting out, et cetera. But then there's the economic side of things. And part of that is a federal thing, whether it be unemployment insurance benefits. But a lot of it is just going to be state specific. Every state is in a different situation because of those types of decisions they've made in the past. You know, we know that small businesses are struggling. We know now with the passage of Prop 208 in November, that has an impact on the economy. And so we just have to take all that into consideration.
Let's focus. Go ahead, Luigi, I change subject.
Senator Messer, just a quick question. Most of the tax cuts, and you can confirm this one or reject the assumption here, is that, but most of the tax cuts that you're looking at, or a significant amount of that's really geared towards counteracting Proposition 208. What I mean by that is you want to, Prop 208 would tax, well, it increases the tax on the wealthier income earners of the state, and the tax cut proposals that you're hoping to do would counteract that by giving tax cuts to the public. Is that a fair assumption?
I wouldn't characterize it exactly in that way for one important reason, and that is no matter what happens, Prop 208 has a surcharge. That surcharge is voter protected. It will raise a certain amount of money that will go to schools just as it was sold. And that isn't, I mean, that reality of the surcharge will not go away. Now, it is true that when we are looking at, if you take a step back and divorce yourself from 208 for a moment, how do we remain competitive? And that's small businesses. It's also the wealthy because there's a lot of spending that happens there. And they're also the most mobile population. I mean, they can just leave the state, and that has a bad economic impact. So we are looking at, well, how do we address that? The surcharge is still intact, but what do we do to make sure that Arizona doesn't become a flyover state any longer, or worse yet, a state people are fleeing from?
Prop 208 is, for folks who are wondering about what it is, it's what voters said that they wanted, which would to simplify it, tax the wealthiest Arizonans with money going to Arizona schools. And I wonder, Senator, with this now passing, would there be a tendency among lawmakers to say, well, we've got education covered now. We don't have to worry too much about putting more money into education. Some of your thoughts on that.
So I would say education is going to be a focus and would have been a focus whether 208 passed or not. It's not just a financial conversation. It's also about methodology, retention, all sorts of other aspects of it, as well as specific elements within K-12 that we fund. For instance, career and technical education or special needs students. So that will continue to be there because none of what Prop 208 did went specifically to that. Now, the influx of resources, you know, one would hope would solve a lot of problems. But there is some skepticism that that was the end-all be-all because a similar, sales pitch was made on Prop 301 back in the day, which is dedicated 6/10 sales tax. And yet we would hear many times that, it's not going to the teachers, which is how it was sold. And so we'll be monitoring it to make sure that the money is going to where we think the voters would want it to go. It was obviously a nail biter of a race. It passed with 51% of the vote. So very controversial. We definitely want to make sure that that it's going where it needs to go.
All right. Changing the laws on recounts and audits. Will there be something that will come out of this legislation concerning election reform?
Yeah, so just to be clear, we've got the ongoing sort of feud between the state Senate and the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors over auditing. So I'm not talking about that with what I'm about to refer to, but we do have a number of bills. I have a number of bills myself aimed at trying to restore or build confidence in the election system. I realize that some people would say, hey, there's nothing wrong, nothing to see here. You know, we don't need to fix a system that ain't broke. Others very much disagree, and it's not just a small number, it's a large number. So my position has been it's undeniable that a lot of people have lost faith. We should all be concerned about that. There's always room for improvement, and we shouldn't dismiss that. So let's see what we can do to make our elections secure. Again, restore or build confidence in them for the future.
I want to ask you just, sorry, Bill, I want to ask some of the message, just a real quick follow-up question on that one. You're correct to mention there's a huge number of people that have lost faith, if you will, in the election. I am wondering if you actually agree with that assessment that there are questions arising out of last year's presidential election that would make you question the integrity of Arizona's own election system. Are you one of those, if I may ask?
Am I one of those? I like that question, yeah. You know, I've tried to approach this from I'm not going to draw any conclusions until I have the evidence point of view. And that's earned me ire from folks on both sides. I've not ever said, hey, I think the election was on the up and up, or I think it was totally fraudulent. There are always issues in every election. There's always fraud in every election. To some degree, it's how much fraud. There's always irregularities, breakdowns in process that we are always looking at and have looked at even well before this election. There's been plenty of bills aimed at trying to improve upon those processes. I've tried to kind of say, look, I'm going to be as neutral an observer as I can, because otherwise legislation that I push will be looked through a specific lens. Oh, well, he's, as you said, one of those. And then, you know, people start to kind of pick sides. And I just want to stay focused on the policies.
And the reason I ask the question is there is a very strong sentiment, and I think most progressives, most Democrats hold this sentiment, that what really happened is that the president, a former president, Donald Trump, said there was fraud that was repeated several times. And at some point, because it was repeated enough and it's coming from, you know, at that point, the head of the Republican Party, then what might have been a system that's really efficient and there's not enough fraud to question the integrity of elections, now perception sort of became a reality. And I just want to get your thoughts on that real quick.
So that's certainly one possibility, that perception became reality because, you know, the guy that's the most powerful person at the time in the world, the top of the ticket, is saying this, and so people will accept it just because of that. However, I will tell you, the people I heard from, have heard from, continue to hear from, it isn't just about that to them. They give specific examples or whatnot, and even kind of harken back to elections of the past. So I try to take a more practical approach. Well, let's do a deep dive into our process and see. Plus, I don't think there's harm in conducting an audit, and, you know, this is back to the Board of Supervisors feud, but to verify, you know, trust but verify, very common expression. And while some, if we try to verify, will never accept results that say anything but fraud, I think the vast majority of people, if they were sort of along for the ride, saw what we were doing, might actually readily embrace whatever the outcome is, whatever the results were. We just haven't been able to get to that point.
Let me change subjects here. Not that that's, we could probably spend the rest of the hour talking about election reform, but an area here of interest is JTED. It's a career program here in Pima County, vocational training, and I see that the state Senate passed your bill to provide fourth-year funding for career technical education. Will that affect JTED or any of these vocational districts?
Yeah, it's specifically aimed at that. They're actually called CTEDs now to more align with what we know them to be, career and technical education districts. Been a strong proponent of CTED programs, love the idea of young people graduating with a trade or a skill that either becomes their profession or, you know, complements any further higher education they pursue. So I'm a strong supporter and, you know, passed unanimously. So I think we would all agree we are. Now it'll end up being folded into the budget discussion. But the nice thing about a unanimous vote in a chamber is it sends a loud signal that this is a priority. It will have to be balanced out against everything else, including COVID, et cetera. But we're clearly sending a message. We're going this direction.
What else is on your plate, Luigi?
I just wanted to go back to, one of the points that JD made at the very beginning of the show, which is that he said that really the focus of the state is managing the pandemic, responding to it so that we can find a way to maybe go back to some kind of a normal. And normal might be a pretty broad term here, but something that can work and we can kind of get on with our lives, if you will. The bills that I've seen the legislature actually pass the first couple of weeks of the session, had really nothing to do with COVID response. I know there's a proposal right now that's gotten some support to raise the unemployment benefits for Arizonans who are struggling. And I know there's a proposal as well that's moving through the process that would provide has been introduced that would provide businesses with protections from what you would consider frivolous lawsuits. But Senator Messner, correct me if I'm wrong. The legislature hasn't really focused on COVID response, has it? At least based on the first month, if you will, of the legislative session.
So I think we get a similar question a lot, even outside of the COVID era. Well, why is the first bill up, X bill, when seemingly this over here is the bigger priority? But when you take a step back and look that we do pass hundreds of bills a session, I think a record number this session, mostly because many bills, frankly, many non-controversial bills from last year died because of COVID. It was very easy to kind of reintroduce them, pick back up where you left off, because they were solving small things not related to COVID. But why put those on hold when they're not, there's general agreement on them? Let's get them through. We often hear us talk about how we can walk and chew gum at the same time. So again, we can do these other things that do matter, maybe not to the entirety of a state or country, but matter to some problem somebody is facing. And if we can push those through, let's do it. And I think that's what you saw in the first part of the session while we continue to have discussions on COVID.
There's another important... Go ahead, Luigi.
I'm sorry. Yeah, just real quickly, Senator Messner. What we have seen the legislature actually focus on that's COVID-related in the first couple of weeks of the session are proposals that would curb, limit the governor's emergency powers, maybe even lift the governor's emergency currency. There's a question as to whether that's dead at this point, but certainly the idea of having the governor go to the legislature to at the very least ask their permission to extend an emergency declaration, because those are the types of proposals that we have actually seen the committees tackle really early on in the legislature. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that. Why do you think that is the case?
Well, I do think the idea of a single person, regardless of their party, having the broad authority they have, even to tackle a pandemic as serious as the one we have, and sort of all these restrictions or regulations that are having enormous impact on people's lives, I think there's something to be said for the legislature, which is meant to be a balance, holding in check the executive branch as well as the judiciary, having a greater seat at the table. I think there's been some frustration because we hear from a lot of folks, about this or that, and feel very powerless to do much about it. And so I think most of those are aimed at saying, hey, we represent a constituency. We want to be able to communicate what it is that they're facing and be part of the broader conversation on what's the right move for the state.
All right, I'm out of time, but since I'm the host, I can extend it a minute or so because there is an item that I think is a very important one. It's concerning the legislative the ballot initiatives, and some lawmakers feel it's too easy for special interests to go around the legislature and instead ask voters to enact laws. And the initiative process is a simple majority of over 50%. The lawmakers now are talking about enacting a 60% threshold that would be needed to pass an initiative. Have you taken a stand on that?
So I typically am in favor of those types of changes. The initiative process is not meant to be the tool of special interest, but that's what we have seen happen. And there is a big difference between something that squeaks by with 50-51% of the vote and something that has much broader support, 60% of the vote. And in Arizona, given that when something passes, we have something unique compared to any other state. California has kind of something similar, but otherwise no other state. And that is that once it's in, it's in. The only way to get rid of it is to go back to the voters. If it turns out to be a disaster, it can take years to undo it. It's called the Voter Protection Act. And so it creates this high stakes situation for anything on the ballot. So it seems to me, in light of that, looking at maybe not every type of bill that goes to the ballot, but certain types, especially tax increases, for instance, should have a higher threshold. And you see other states that follow that model too.
All right, J.D. Mesnard, thank you very much, Senator from District 17. Thanks for the time. And Luigi, please hang on the line. We're going to have a few comments together after the break. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line guests appear courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Luigi Del Puerto of the Capital Times and me, Bill Buckmaster, right after this. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to State Senator J.D. Mesnard, District 17 from Chandler. We had a very good session, covered a lot of ground, thanks to Luigi Del Puerto, at the Associate Publisher and Arizona News Service Editor for the Arizona Capital Times, who was also with me on the interview. And Luigi, I've got about 3 minutes with you. And I think we can say some themes, and I know you cover this every day, but there are a couple of themes emerging from this session: election reform, the COVID relief, and the rainy day fund. Is that about right?
Yes, you are exactly right about those three things. There's also criminal justice reform, which seems to be potentially maybe the year when they can actually do a significant amount of, significant legislation in this arena. So election, yes, elections, criminal justice, of course, the budget is always one. I do want to talk about just really briefly, and I always try and put things in context. You know, what's really happening is that we have a session that's in the middle of a pandemic after a very strenuous acerbic election season and with a narrower split in the state legislature. And what I mean by that is we're asking the Senate, you had 17-13 before, 17 Republicans, 13 Democrats, you now have 16-14. And what that really means is that the Republicans who have an agenda cannot afford to lose a single member of their caucus. And if that happens, which has happened, a couple times already, then the Republican agenda is stalled. And this is a little bit unique, or not unique, new to the Senate. You know, the House has had this problem for years, and they've maybe found a way to kind of navigate through that. But in the Senate, they're just having a really difficult time. J.D. Mesnard mentioned the resolution to hold the Maricopa County supervisors in contempt over, auditing and and forensic evidence. You know, if you recall, what happened is that Senator Paul Boyer voted against this resolution, voted against his party's position on the issue, and his I shouldn't say voted against the party's position on the issue. His reasoning is that I want to give both sides, the supervisors and then the state legislature, more time to negotiate, and so let's not pass this contempt resolution just as yet. What's happened since is that, or what's happened is that Paul Boyer is now kind of in a very lonely boat, and you can kind of you can look at him as sort of the perhaps the most powerful member of the state Senate right now. That could be potentially, you know, that has some shades of truth to it. Or he's really in isolation, because even though he votes with Democrats on certain things, he still is very conservative legislature, at least very conservative socially, for example, and that puts him at odds with Democrats.
All right, Luigi, I'm out of time, unfortunately. This looks like a session that's not going to end anytime soon, correct?
It could last until, quite frankly, June, or it could end next week. Probably not next week, but it could end sooner than people anticipate, yes.
Luigi Del Porto, thank you for spending part of your lunch hour with us. Thanks, Luigi.
Have a good one.
Thanks a lot.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning to visit a beautiful area of the Southwest, the Land of Enchantment. Hopefully they will be ready, our friends over in Silver City. I know they're anxiously awaiting the return of out-of-state visitors. Hopefully that day will be coming very soon. You can start your planning now by going to southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of weekend and during-the-week activities and great places to stay. Dan Gibson, a visit Tucson with us on the live line, longtime Weekend Watch host. Matt Russell is recreating over on the coast in California. Dan, how are you?
I am good. It's my first KVOI appearance of 2021.
I can't believe it. And it won't.
I know, it's weird. I feel like I was blackballed.
I know, yeah.
Like maybe I was on a list.
Oh, we're going to
upset the Bustos family. I don't know.
No. We're going to make up with it because you'll be back with me. I think we're going to do that very soon, Tuesday, to talk about resume our monthly tourism updates. But in the meantime, what's going on this weekend?
Great question. Still a little strange, but it's more of a thing of what to look forward in Tucson food. But if you're looking for something right away, may I suggest on Monday at the various Tap and Bottle locations, downtown Tap and Bottle North and westbound at the MSA Annex, they'll be tapping the Dragoon's Anniversary Imperial Stout. Every year, Dragoon Brewery does a new anniversary stout to celebrate. This is the 9th anniversary this year, believe it or not. This year, it's aged in a Buffalo Trace barrel of used whiskey barrel. They'll be able to taste that at all of those locations on Monday, February 22nd. It's an opportunity to celebrate both Dragoon and the fine people at Tap a Bottle. Starts at noon until the beer runs out. So I don't know if you might want to be there at 12:05. Think ahead.
The beer may run out fairly quickly. I mean, it sounds like they've got a great event going on. What else is happening?
I hope it holds up till 1:05.
There you go.
Because that would be a little inconsistent. Also, I'll put in a good word for you.
All right. What else is happening?
Looking forward. Anyone who's lived in Tucson for any amount of time loves Rincon Market, loved the space. It's recently been taken over by the people who own Prep and Pastry, Prep and Pastry, Commoner and Company. I had a little bit of a preview of it the other day. Spectacular things going into that space. They're going to have coffee, fresh roasted by Cresta. They're going to have a whole, it's going to be Tucson's only charcuterie program, to my knowledge. They're aging meats as we speak. I had a little bit of duck prosciutto, which was lovely.
Wow.
Looks like they're going to have great pizzas, great beer and wine selection. If you were worried about what's going to happen to the Rincon Market space, Flores Market Run coming in about 4 weeks on the market side and about 6 weeks on the restaurant side. It's going to be spectacular. Kyle Nottingham doing an excellent job with the food over there.
Boy, I can't.
Follow him on the socials. It'll be great.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back to that location. Lots of good memories there. Dan, I could take one more, my friend.
Well, you know what? It's something you can enjoy on the internet while you're waiting for all the restaurants to sort of come back to their full form. As you probably know, Maria Maison, head chef of Boca Tequila and Tacos, is going on the forthcoming series of Top Chef Bravo's masterpiece of a food program. She's one of, I think, 16 chefs who's participating on it. We're excited to watch her journey starting on April 1st. But right now, you can celebrate that opportunity. If you look on Instagram and you go on the little thing where you can add the gifts to your images, type in Maria Top Chef. There are 3 gifts of our very own Maria Maison that you can add to your internet imagery. So there's one of her looking surprised, one of her looking sort of puzzled. All the emotions covered with Maria as the season of Top Chef comes up.
All right. Dan Gibson, always a pleasure. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Tuesday with our tourism report. Thanks, Dan.
Looking forward to it.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by Christophon. Thanks to Rose Brandt, my assistant, getting all those podcasts up in a timely manner. Everybody here, including engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, the entire team at Bustos Media. All of us wish you a safe and pleasant weekend. And our music to take you into the weekend is by Todd Rundgren, singing Love is the Answer. Have a good weekend, everybody.
said.